What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles. Made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, man?
Yeah, first duet podcast in a hot minute with just the two of us.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate enough to, with guests, you know, we set that goal of 6 guest episodes a month, and right now we're rolling at 8.
kind of forgot about these duets.
We forgot that we have this as an option.
Yeah, well, we had a few cancellations this week, so I was like, oh, fuck it. Well, here's an opportunity for
that massive snowstorm that came through.
Yeah, oh, there was all a whole half inch. I'm glad they called all the schools off.
Right, so happy for that.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
Fucking St. Louis, man.
Gotta love it.
But yeah, we wanted to do a Q&A episode. We put question boxes out on our Instagrams, and you know, we had quite a few questions come in, so we thought we'd you know, just spend a little time answering these questions and hanging out.
These are always fun,
dude. I look forward to these. Yeah. These are some of my favorite ones that we do.
Yep.
Just because it gets our, you know, people that we know involved, and it's just fun. Yeah. You know, I feel like it always sparks good conversation.
Right, and it can be so different. I think we've got some different topics to talk about.
Like we're very the topics we're talking about today are very very diverse.
Yes.
You know, so well, you want to get right into it? You want to go first or me?
Sure. I mean, we can dive right in. This is from a fellow mortgage person. As a new parent, what's your best piece of advice for work home life balance?
Ooh, that's a tough one, man. I still struggle with that. You know, especially, you know, certain days where you've got a lot more going on, especially in the real estate industry. You've got, you know, no day looks exactly the same, and you know, sometimes you have things that kind of need to be handled right then and there. Or you're going to lose a deal. But then other, you know, you got to realize that there's other things that can wait.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I found that works best for me is, you know, just dedicating a certain amount of time, you know, a certain number of hours per day where I'm like, okay, I'm unplugging from my work. I'm going to go set my phone over here on the counter. I'm not going to look at it. And, you know, for the next 2 hours, and, you know, I hope nobody needs me for anything, but you know, this is my time to be with my kids, and I'm going to spend time with them and so they get 100% of me. So I've been getting better at doing that and setting my phone aside, or, you know, just putting it on do not disturb and not looking at it and just being completely focused on the kids.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. I mean, easier said than done though. Cause I mean, there's some days where I plan to do that, and then, you know, I've got something going on that like needs to be handled right then and there, or we're going to lose the deal, or there's a deadline or something along those lines. But doing my best.
Yeah. And I feel like on my side of things, I have a little bit more control and structure of my schedule. There's not as much last minute things that come up, or things that if something does come up, it's not like it can't wait. Obviously you got somebody like last minute pre-approvals, but that's, I mean, to be honest, it's kind of a thing of a past. You don't see that anymore. You might, like, if I'm doing, you know, 25, 30 pre-approvals in a month, there might be one or two that are like last minute, hey, I need to get pre-approved type things. But for the most part, most people are,
they're proactive. Yeah, they're proactive.
Yeah, proactive in it. And because they do have the time. I think that was the one thing with COVID that was great, was how, you know, new listing coming live Friday, and we're going to not, you know, we're not going to review offers until Sunday night or Monday or whatever. Yeah. So you have that time now where you can take your time through the week. Like when I first got in the business, it wasn't like that. Like, hey, you get a call, you got to get this done because they're writing on a house that just went live today on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. So a lot of that changed with COVID, which I think is great because it's helping buyers become more educated in the process, and that the ones that are doing it and taking their time through it are more educated, less stressed, and I think they have an overall better process. But when it comes to the work-life balance, it's for me, I have complete and total control of my calendar. That's first and foremost. Like, I've got my non-negotiables that I need to do every day, and I knock those out in the first part of the day, and then I leave the end for scheduling phone calls and all that. So like, you can call me and you know, if I don't have anything going on, or if I've gotten everything done that I need to get done, I'll answer the call that day. But most of the time, you know, if I answer, I'm like, hey, I'm getting ready to head into an appointment, can we schedule a time for later in the day? And most people are very receptive to that. And they're like, oh yeah, sure, I'm available this time.
Yeah.
And then we get it scheduled. So on
that, go ahead.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, unfortunately I'm divorced, but fortunately at the same time, you know, I don't have my kids every single day. So like the days that I don't have my kids, I can fuck a work-life balance. I'm working.
Yeah, you're working all day.
Yeah. When I have my kids, I got to pick them up from school between 4 and 4:30, or I got to pick Connor up by 4, and then I'm picking Oliver up right after that. So once that happens, it's just like, hey, yeah, I'm going to have my phone, and if it's an emergency and I take a look at it, but it doesn't really ever happen.
Yeah.
So I can take that time and spend that time with them and do things with them when I need to. So,
yeah. And then I think another piece would be setting expectations with your clients beforehand, like letting them know, like, hey, you know, from 4 to 7 p.m., like that's the time I spend with my kids, you know, like. Sure, I know that that's kind of prime house seeing time, and I will certainly make exceptions on certain days. But like, if it's a, you know, if it can wait to a day that works more conveniently for me, like, you know, let's. But if it's something we need to see right away because it's, you know, they're accepting offers, it's a hot listing, and we need to go right now. Like, that's, I totally understand. But like, I, you know, I let them know, like, hey, you know, I've got two young kids, and I'm, you know, it's very important that I'm there to put them to bed every night. Right. You know, like that's something that's very important to me. So I try to be there, you know, every day that I can do that. Right. You know, there's some days that I'm not there for that, but you know, as often as I can be there to put them to bed, like that's important to me. So I always want to be there for that. And then, you know, spending a couple hours with them before that, you know, playing and doing whatever.
Yeah. Or like, and for those that are married, and making sure that you have that conversation with your partner, or your spouse, and that, you know, they're supportive of that. You know, a relationship's never going to be 50-50. You know, sometimes it's going to be 90-10 or 100-0, or, but you got to make sure that, you know, you're balancing each other out and letting your partner be able to take the time and do the things that they want to do, and that you're making time for each other. You know, I know that you guys, you know, you talk about this, it's, you know, it's different, but like your time with Gina is, like, what, after 8 p.m.?
Yeah, like 8 to 9:30,
right.
10 o'clock before she's falling asleep on the couch.
Right. But but that's every night, right? Yeah. So even though it's may not be a lot, it spread out over time on a continue and consistent basis, that's still a good amount of time to spend with your partner. Obviously, you want to have more time and spend more, as much time with them as you can. But, I mean, at the same time, you want your own time, your own space, and I'm sure she does too.
Of course.
But, you know, it's coming down to making sure that you just control your schedule. You're upfront with your clients. And I always tell them, I'm like, oh, well, like, hey, I'm with my kids. Can I give you a call back either tomorrow during a certain time, or like after I get my kids to bed, it's going to be a little bit later if you're okay with that. You know,
I do that all the time.
Right. And people are very understanding with that. And, you know, and as long as, and you're talking to your agents as well, like as a loan officer, the loan officer asked this question, and that's the thing. Sometimes we think we have to drop everything that we're doing right then and there, you know, having been in this business for 10 years. And that's how I thought for the longest period of time. it's not necessarily the case. As long as you are upfront and have that open, honest communication, most people are going to understand, like, oh, hey, listen, I've got my kids right now. It's kind of hard for me to talk. Can you give me an hour? Or can I call after I get my kids to bed? Like, you know, there's ways around it. There's ways that you can build that time in if it's important to you to make sure that you're getting that time in. And if you're communicating it to people, they're going to understand and they should be respectful of it. And quite honestly, if it's someone that's not really respectful of that, like, okay, shoot, sorry, then you should probably call another loan officer.
Yeah.
You know,
and people should be understanding
right.
that. Everybody's got a life.
Right.
You know?
And if you got somebody that's not and they're going to be, I mean, demanding, like, that's going to be a client that's just kind of going to be a pain in the ass, let's be real. And, you know, I don't have a problem having clients that are like that. And I know how to work with those people, and I do work with those people. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, now you know going ahead, like, hey, this person's not going to take that. And you kind of have to be a little bit more active in how you're scheduling time with that client. Like, you got to be more proactive. Like, all right, hey, you know, let's, you know, you want to talk, you want to have a conversation today? Okay, well, here are the times that we can schedule a call. And if it doesn't work, okay, well, tomorrow. Well, you have to be proactive in terms of controlling that schedule and staying on top of that schedule.
Yeah.
So
it's perfect. All right. Next question. Ooh, this one's good. What's a new hobby you see yourself picking up in the next 5 years?
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's a really good one. Yeah. Man, I got a couple. Mm-hmm. I think one that I would really, really like to get into. I've been a handful of times, but it's something that I, you know, really enjoyed and would be hunting.
Yeah.
I've been hunting a handful of times. I killed a deer once, which was pretty cool. You know, I ate it and it was, you know, Gina doesn't like it, but I ate almost the whole thing and which was cool, and just like the whole experience with hunting was really cool. That'd be something I'd really like to get into. More specifically, I'd really like to get into bow hunting.
Yeah.
You know, just for the fact that it's like something, because I mean, with where I live and in my backyard, I could totally like set up a small like range where I could like go out and shoot a couple arrows every night and like kind of make it part of like a routine for me, where it's something I could actually do. Like, I can't exactly do that with a rifle in my backyard. I live in a neighborhood, but yeah, I think hunting would be one that I think I'd like to get into. You know, specifically bow hunting. You know, I got a good buddy of mine that's real into bow hunting, and he said multiple times he just wants to, hey man, let me know. We'll go to the archery store. We'll get you fitted. You know, I'll make sure you're buying all the good shit. And you know, and so yeah, I just need to actually just take him up on that and make it happen. And then, I mean, in my backyard, I could just go get one of those foam targets and set it up, you know, in the trees or something right behind my house, or even under my deck or something like that. So. Just got to make sure my dog's not outside.
I've got one that I think that,
yeah, what do you think?
That I think you'll probably agree with too.
What's that?
Becoming a sports dad.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that, man.
Yeah. I'm excited to get them into sports and be their biggest fans and cheer them on. Do I want to coach them? Fuck no.
Yeah.
You know, even though Melissa automatically signed me up to coach them for baseball, I'm like, oh my God. I just want to kick back and watch them. I just want to enjoy them and watch them from a young age playing the game and enjoying it before it gets too serious.
Yeah.
But yeah, that and like into wrestling and maybe jujitsu, but like jujitsu for myself, like that's something else that I want to dive deeper into over the next 5 years, you know, can like really fine tune this schedule, like where I can still play hockey and do jujitsu. CrossFit's year round, continue to grow with the CrossFit. But you know, that's a year round thing. I'm not going to ever stop that. But obviously, you know, I love playing hockey. Like
I almost came to your guys' game last night. I was very
really?
Close. Nick was like, oh, it's at 9 p.m. and it's at Kirkwood's, which is like, you know,
relatively
early and relatively close. Yeah. Which I was like, fuck, should I go? And then I ended up
it was a good game too.
Fuck.
Yeah, it was a good
game.
Well, it started off really shitty. We were like, oh fuck. We were down 3-0 within the first like 5 minutes of the game.
Oh,
like we came out flat because we hadn't played in like 2 weeks.
Okay.
And so come out a little flat, but then we ended up winning 5-4.
Sick.
And no, it was a good game. It was actually kind of physical and a little cheap and chippy, which, you know, I got a penalty. I fucking rocked a guy. This guy was being cheap. I mean, this guy was going around checking people, like running them off in the boards, and he was hacking and slashing. And I just had the perfect opportunity where he, like, the puck was in his feet. He was coming up the boards, and I'm like, fuck this guy. I'm tired of his bullshit. And I just put a fucking shoulder right into him. It was right at the end of the period too. And I almost got away with it, but they were raising hell and, you know, he went down hard and
well, you're a big guy.
And he went down. Yeah. He went down hard and so a loud noise and a lot of yelling. So the ref just threw his hands up. Oh, there's a penalty. And he actually gave me a penalty for tripping. Not even what I did to the guy. They didn't even see it. Yeah. And so I was like, whatever. So got a penalty for that. But now I laid that guy out pretty good, which he deserved for sure. This guy was a little asshole this whole fucking game. But getting deeper into jiu-jitsu, like I really enjoyed it for the 3 months that I did it. And now being able to like, hey, hockey is this from here to here. And I have all this time that I need to fill to continue to stay active and stay in shape. And that's where I'm going to supplement, you know, instead of doing hockey 2 times a week, jiu-jitsu 2 times a week.
Yeah.
And then, that's a great point. So, but yeah, also hunting, you know, that's something that I've got a lot of friends that do. That have always been trying to get me into it. And I think that would be something fun, especially the bow hunting.
Yeah.
I just think that in terms of hunting, I feel like that's more of an actual hunt.
Yeah.
Than shooting a gun. But
yeah, well, it's a lot harder. Mm-hmm. You have to get fucking way closer. You know, I'm thinking about the one time I killed a deer. It was probably 80-100 yards away, which you're not hitting that with a bow. You know, I mean, from my understanding, you know, you want to be less than like 40-50 yards, like
right.
At the maximum,
ideally like 20-25,
yeah, which is like you gotta get pretty fucking close, you know. But like the satisfaction that you must feel, you know,
right.
For take, you know, putting a deer down. And
have you
doing
talked
it
to Scott about any of his hunting stories?
No, and that's why I really want to get him on. I want to get him on. I mean, there's so many things I just want to ask him so many questions, but like, you know, I always see him around here, but I'm like, man, I just want to
right. For those that don't know, Scott is the owner of Adventure Unknown, where our podcast studio is and the club that we belong, that we joined. And if you show up and you come in, it almost looks like a hunting lodge, but there's animals all over and every animal that you see is something that he's killed and has had mounted.
Yeah. And they're like exotic animals too. They're not just like, it's not just like all deer heads. Like it's like these like crazy rams and like.
There's a cheetah.
There's like a fucking. There's a bear.
Or is it a leopard? Is it a cheetah? It's a cheetah.
I think it's a cheetah. And he's got. I mean, just like all these animals up on the wall, and it's not just your standard like white-tailed deer.
Yeah.
It's like
the coolest story that I talked to him about, and we'll have him on. I'm not going to spoil it. I'll let him tell it when he comes on. But was this ram that he got, and where he had to actually like go up into the mountain?
Yeah, I hear that those are. Like some of the most difficult hunts.
He's like, this was hands down the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
Really?
Yeah. It's a cool story.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, some of the context that I have, like, or some of the knowledge I have about boat, like specifically hunting, like these like rams and like these like sheep that, bighorn sheep or whatever they're called, like, Cameron Haynes, I'm sure you know him. Mm-hmm. Like he talks about how his mentor, the guy who kind of taught him everything he knows about bow hunting, that's how he died.
Oh, really?
Was hunting one of those things like up in the mountains, and he like slipped and fell and like fell down the mountain and killed him.
Oh, yeah.
So like, you know, because a lot of them are like you're walking on these like really like choppy rocks and slate, slip and fall, and you're like walking up mountains like this, mm-hmm. and you're literally having to like climb, and then make a shot. I'm like fuck.
Yeah. And then go and get it.
And then go and get then it. Carry it down. Yeah.
I probably won't be doing that.
I'll start a lot simpler than that.
Yeah.
You know, like, but man, how cool would it be to kill like an elk or like a bison or like something like big like that, that you can like, I mean, the meat, you know, like having just filling the freezer
and trying different animals and living like a caveman like that.
Yeah. Man, you feel connected to the food, which is, that's something I kind of felt with the deer that I killed. Like, every time I ate it, every time I thawed another pack of the ground meat, like it was like, okay, I was reminded, you know, like I, you know, kind of brought that whole day back to me, you know, and it was like and it felt good to be able to like eat it. Like I didn't kill it just to kill it.
Yeah.
You know, I killed it to eat it. And that was really cool.
Well, that,
you know, I'd like to do more of that.
That and his take on like the cheetah that he killed, like up here listening to a conversation that he was having with somebody where they had just gotten back from a safari in Africa, and they were talking about like how just beautiful it was and seeing these animals and all that. And then there's this dead cheetah in the clubhouse, and they were upset about it and had a conversation with Scott, but Scott was just like, hey, like this is what that guy does. Like, that's how he makes his living. The the government there has so many tags.
Yeah, I'm sure that costs Scott a fortune.
There's so many tags per animal to regulate the population so it's not killing the people that live there. Mm-hmm. And so, like, assume every animal that is hunted and killed, there's a tag on that to control the population of that animal so it doesn't, like, overpopulate the area and ruin the ability for people that are there to live their lives. Mm-hmm. So...
Well, and hunting gets like such a, you know, like I feel like a bad rap a lot, you know, when you look at movies and TV, like the hunters are always depicted as like the bad guys,
yeah.
You know, like the, you know, you look at any like Disney movie, like Bambi or whatever, mm-hmm. like they're always depicted as, you know, these like awful, like celebrating when they kill something. It's all about, you know, like these like hillbillies that are just want to like, woo, yeah. you know, we killed another one, yeah. you know, it's like, dude, that's, I feel like that's not what it is.
Right. And all I think about is really like hard. Wedding crashers. I'm going to go shoot some fucking pheasants.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the fuck a pheasant is. Yeah, I sneak away on the weekends every time to go shoot some pheasants.
Yeah. I don't know what the fuck a pheasant is.
And I'm surprised we didn't talk to Joey more about, well, the duck hunting aspect.
No, I'd like to do that, yeah. too. That's yeah. another thing. I mean,
I heard duck hunting fun. Is so addictive as from what I've heard.
Well, it just seems fun because mm-hmm. it's well, like Joey was telling us, like, it's just kind of like a hang. Like, you're hanging, like, with your buddies. You don't have to be quiet. Yeah. You can just, like, sit there, cook food. And,
shooting
like,
shit. Yeah, you know, shooting guns.
Yeah, they pop up every once in a while, and yeah. then that's when you're shooting, and then the rest of the time you're, like, just chilling with the boys. And,
yeah.
Which that seems cool.
Right.
You know, like I'm not opposed to doing that at all. Like, I got some cousins that are super into like
yeah.
waterfowl hunting.
Yeah. I've got a buddy that has a lot, his family has a lot of property over in Illinois and they've got duck blinds and all that set up on the property and they're constantly going duck hunting.
Yeah.
So, but
cool.
Next question. All right. What qualities, this is a question for me here.
Yeah.
What qualities are you looking for in your next relationship? So
yeah, this is all you, buddy.
So yeah, dating in your 30s. It sounds about it's about as fun as it sounds. You know, I want somebody that I'm looking for somebody that's driven, that has success within their career, has a good personality, good head on their shoulders, good moral compass, things like that. You know, someone that I can have a conversation with and have fun with, like. Someone that's pushing me to be better, but I'm pushing them to be better at the same time. And, you know, we're just, you know, creating a life together, but at the same time, we still have our separate lives that we're encouraging each other to have, you know, we have our separate lives, but at the end of the day, we come together and have that life together. And it's tough to find, you know, it's tough to find out there. Yeah. So, but yeah,
this is something I've never asked you. You know, having been divorced, do you see yourself getting married again?
That's a good question. Yes. You know, the first go around was very shotgun style wedding. You know, we got pregnant, got engaged, got married, and it felt almost like kind of forced. Mm-hmm. And both Melissa and I can look back and agree that, you know, we probably shouldn't have gotten married, you know, to have that experience, like, my favorite part of the wedding, like when I go to weddings, my favorite part of it, or when I'm officiating weddings is I'm ordained to people. People let me marry them.
Yeah.
Seven of them, actually, seven people. I'm 6 for 7 right now.
Oh, one of them got divorced because yeah. you used to say you were undefeated.
Yeah. Yeah. No, one was unsuccessful. They had a good run at it. But one's unsuccessful, but the rest are still married. But no, one of my favorite part is watching the groom as the first time they're seeing the bride. Like,
I cried.
Yeah. I want that. I want that experience. I want to see my bride walking down the aisle in a dress and having that first look. Now, do I want a big wedding? No, not at all. You know, I just want like small, intimate, like close family, close friends, like nothing big. You know, maybe 30 to 50 people, if that. But it's just, it's something that I would like to have that experience. I like do it right, like with the person that I know that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. And, you know, that's the one thing I guess I've learned through all this is like to be a little bit picky. You know, this is, you know, it's not just something that you jump into, and going through the divorce process isn't fun, even though as amicable as Melissa and I have been through all this, it's not something that I recommend, you know, going through it. I mean, you are separating a family, you are, you know, all those things, but ultimately, yeah, I mean, if I, you know, finding the right person, yeah, I would want to get married again.
Cool. Yeah. I was just curious. I don't think I'd ever ask you that.
Yeah, no, right. With the right person for sure. So, but yeah, that's what I'm looking for in a partner, is someone that is driven and motivated, and we're both willing to, or wanting to push each other to be better. So
I'm looking to buy a home this year, but I'm struggling to find something and get it under contract in this competitive market. What tips do you have? It's a good one.
It is a good one.
Yeah. Cause I'm experiencing this with a lot of my clients, you know, with my buyers specifically. The market's getting competitive here again. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing a lot of multiple offers when homes are priced appropriately. And, you know, there's a handful of things. Obviously, you know, first things first, you need to have a good lender. You need to have someone that you can, you know, trust, someone that's going to be responsive, someone that's going to be able to answer your questions when you need them, when you need to write an offer on a Saturday afternoon. Are they going to answer your phone call? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to figure out the numbers, figure out, get you what you need so that I can write that offer? So first step, I would say.
Or even just a proactive lender.
Yeah, that too.
Because, I mean, that's a lot of the times, by the time they're looking at houses with you, they already have numbers for me.
Yes.
They already have that presentation that I work up that they've sent me, and I've showing them either multiple houses, or like, hey, they have one house that they're dead set on, or even if it's multiple houses and they come back, hey, we looked at these houses, this is the one that we're focused on. Then I can go back and show them like, hey, this is what that house looks like and what it's going to cost you at different price points, that allow them to, you know, in a multiple offer situation, be comfortable with what it is that they're getting into, like realizing that, hey, even if we go 10, 15, even 20,000 over, it's really not going to change how much we have to come in with. And it's not going to really mess with our monthly payment all that much. And, you know, that's the one. Yeah, I agree with you there. And then also, like, making sure you're getting fully pre-approved. Like, hey, you're getting
everything.
Yeah, get all your docs turned in. Let me review it. Hell, when it gets super competitive, if we really need to, put you through underwriting so you have a fully underwritten loan, which you've got pre-approval, and then you have a fully underwritten loan. That's even stronger than a pre-approval. That means we're fully committing to doing this loan as long as it meets that criteria or less, which usually when we're doing it, putting it through underwriting, we're maxing out the what you can qualify for. And it's allowing us to go in and come back and say, hey, all right, yeah, you're qualified up to this payment with, you know, in this sales price and this with this much money down. And our underwriters have put their stamp of approval. Now, I take pride in my pre-approvals and haven't had to deny anybody that I have pre-approved. And so, you know, that's because I'm getting all these docs up front. I'd rather be a pain in your ass up front when nothing's on the line than, you know, oh yeah, sure, you're good to go based on everything you told me. Let's be real. Calculating income is not set like black and white. It's not, oh, I make this much per hour and work 40 hours a week, but do you, like, there was one pay stub you sent me that shows 38. So that now just makes your income variable. Like, there's different ways that we can calculate that we have to calculate it. And so, you know, making sure that you've been fully pre-approved, like, you know, where you're at, your income has been accurately calculated and been turned in and credit's been pulled, and you don't have anything to really worry about at that point.
Yeah, definitely. One other tip I would say is, I mean, you need to find a good agent too. Someone who's not, you know, who's got experience in multiple offer situations, which, you know, if you've been an agent for the last few years, you've probably experienced. And, you know, hopefully it's someone that's won a few of these bidding wars, because, you know, and I think really ultimately that comes down to, I guess, two things. Would be the agent having a good relationship with the agent on the other side, which I think is extremely, extremely important, is being able to create that relationship with the listing agent on the other side, trying to figure out what those other offers are that are in place. I mean, you know, most of the time they're not going to tell you exactly. Every once in a while you'll get an agent that'll give you exactly what you need, but, you know, that's kind of few and far between. But, you know, you need to learn, you know, they need to know the right questions to ask mm-hmm. these agents so that you can kind of get a good idea of where you need to be. And, like, being willing to write a strong offer if it's needed. Like, you need to be willing to go, if it's a house you want and it's got a bunch of other offers on it, like, you're going to need to go over list price. Yeah. Like, it's what needs to happen. I know it's not sexy, and I know it's not, the most attractive thing. It's not a deal, right, but it's, if it's the house you want, you can see yourself being there for the foreseeable future. It's, I think it's a good move.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say those are, you know, and then.
And to piggyback off of what you're saying is also having a good agent, they might be able to go out and find you an off market deal.
That's what I was going to get you next.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like the, like an agent that's going to go out there and try and find, like you set the goals on what it is you want that, and you have a strong, solid agent. They're going to go out and try and, if they can't find it on the market, they're going to try and go and find you an off market deal, yeah, which is going to give you an even better competitive advantage because you're the only one looking at that house.
Right.
So,
yeah. And some ways that, you know, we do that as agents, some ways that I do it personally is, well, first of all, I work with both buyers and sellers. So, you know, if I have someone who's coming to me that is looking to sell and I find that it matches up I have a buyer that's looking for that, then I try to match them up that way. And, you know, it's not always going to work, but there's a chance, and it has worked for me several times in the past. One other thing I like to do is golden letters. A golden letter, or, you know, that's what somebody called it, but it's basically, you know, say, hey, Zach, I want to be in this specific neighborhood over here and whatever. So I basically write a letter and I mail it out to everybody in that neighborhood that says, like, hey, you know, you had a house that sold right up the street. It sold for X amount of, you know, it was listed for this, sold for this. My clients love that house. They really want to be in this neighborhood. You know, if you are possibly considering selling at some point in the future, you know, this is my number. Please contact me. You know, they would love to purchase your house. They really want to be over here. And, you know, that's something you can mail out to a whole neighborhood.
Right.
You know, that's a great tool that, you know, I've found that's worked for me over the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, what was the number that just came out? 74% of licensed real estate agents didn't close a single deal last year.
Yeah.
And 2% of all of them closed 11 deals or more.
That's crazy.
So you got to find that agent
that's doing 20 plus a
year.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that's what you want.
Exactly.
Because if they're doing 20 plus a year, then they're probably full time.
Right. And they're hustling. You know, because that's that in a market like we have been with low inventory, that means they're out there hustling and finding deals and finding things for their clients and working hard for their clients. And, you know, having a good agent is key. You know, having a good team that you're working with is key. Yes. And, you know, and not all agents are the same. Not all lenders are the same. Like it just, and even within like companies, like, you know, there's agent loan officers within our company, there's loan officers and other companies. Like, hey, you've got your top producing loan officers, you got your top producing agents. Like, not all agents are the same, not all loan officers and mortgage lenders are the same. And so you need to make sure that you're like doing the research, like really looking into it, really asking the questions, you know, of your loan officer and your agents and diving into those to make sure you're being represented by a solid team.
Yeah. So. Well said.
All right. Kind of to piggyback off that. So, you know, I've had a couple people that have been buying or thinking about buying and they're just like, well, what's the process? What docs are needed, you know, just to continue on the real estate side of things. So, you know, the process of purchasing a house. So most people will, first thing they do is contact a real estate agent, say, hey, I want to buy a house. And then the first thing that a real estate agent is going to do is refer you to their lender or ask if you've been pre-approved. And if you haven't, they're going to refer you to their preferred lender. And that's where that process starts. You go through the pre-approval process and everybody's pre-approval process is different. Mine's a little bit more extensive, but it really educates the home buyers. So they know what they're getting into and they can understand the numbers and they can understand, you know, having that being prepared to purchase and realize like, hey, I might have to go above and beyond and to make an offer. Because obviously, you know, you got a real estate agent telling you it's one thing. Like, I'm not out selling you the house. I'm just there to give you the money. And so on my side, it's like, hey, I can sell that. Like, I can tell clients like, hey, this is what I've been seeing from the offers that have been winning and the contracts I've been getting. This is what they've been doing. And then it just kind of reinforces what the agent's saying. So having that good team that knows how to communicate to the clients but that's your first step is getting pre-approved and to tie in the docs. So your standard docs are 2 years of W-2s, 1 month of pay stubs, and 2 months of bank statements. Now, obviously going a little bit deeper, if you're self-employed, depending on how long you've been self-employed and the program that you're doing, most likely you're going to need 2 years of tax returns, full tax returns of either if you're Schedule C, then it's just going to be on your personal tax returns underneath a profit and loss. or if you have separate business returns, then you'll need to supply both personal and business returns with the K-1 statements that come with it. You have rental properties, you're going to have to supply some leases. You're going to have to supply, again, the Schedule E that goes with it, depending on how long you've been renting. If it's a relatively new rent, then we just need the lease agreements and all that are signed and shown, and that you've collected a deposit and at least 1 month's worth of rent. But there's a whole bunch of different situations and different things, but the majority, the major docs and the standard docs that come across are 2 years of W-2s, most recent one with the pay stubs, and bank statements. And that's the majority that you'll need. The majority of people will need those. If you're an hourly employee or you have some sort of variable income, just because the W-2s they don't break down. Like if, for example, a nurse, you've got shift differentials, you've got overtime, you've got double time, or even if you're in the union, if you can supply the very last pay stub that's paid in the previous 2 years, so like right now we're looking at 23 and 24 when it comes to pre-approvals. So if you can supply the very last pay stub that was paid in 23 and paid in 24, that'll give a full year-to-date breakdown of all the different ways that you were paid that we can go in and get that income calculated accurately. Or, for example, if you're an hourly employee and you just received a pay raise, you can go in and take and basically get a full 12-month worth of hours that you worked and multiply it by your new pay rate instead of, hourly is considered variable. So we have to take typically a 2-year average of that. Obviously you're making more now than you were 2 years ago. Hell, you were making more now than you probably were 6 months ago hourly. So to get the most out of that, the best way is to, instead of taking a 2-year average, is, hey, so right now we're in February. So you get me from February 1st of 2024 until January 31st of 2025, and you can get those total hours that you worked in that time, I'll multiply it by your new pay rate and get you even more money. So for qualifying. So there's a bunch of different things that kind of go into it. So
yeah. So first step, pre-approval. Second step with your agent will be, signing that buyer's agency agreement. That's, it's a new thing nationwide, but not a new thing here in Missouri where we are. I've always had to make someone sign a buyer's agency agreement, and it's, and people kind of have a hard time with this, I've come to find. But, basically what a buyer agency agreement is it kind of, it's an agreement between you and that real estate agent that's going to basically tie you to them so that you can't, they can't spend all this time and effort helping you go and look at a house, go look at a bunch of houses for you to then go and, have another agent send you something that you go and purchase it with them. So it basically it's set for a certain time period. So, I usually do mine for 6 months, cause that's pretty standard. And you're, kind of ties you with that agent for 6 months. And, they're going to put their commission in there, what the amount that they're going to receive. And, if there were a seller that's not willing to pay the commission, then that comes to the buyer, which, in my experience here in Missouri, that's not happened to me really at all. Like I've had one client have to pay like a small portion, but everything else has always been paid by the seller. So, a lot of people get worried about this buyer agency agreement. And here's the thing. And if you decide halfway through this or a month working with this agent that you don't like them, or there's something that they're doing that you're not liking, they can release you from that contract. Like it's not a till death thing. So no. Just know that it's pretty easy to get out of it. If things aren't working out.
Right.
And then really after that, it's, pre-approval, buyer agency agreement, and then we can go out and start looking at houses. And then once we find the one we like, if it's a hot house and it's getting a bunch of offers, and this house is at the top of your budget, like that's something to keep in mind too. If you're looking at houses that very first weekend, and it's like say your pre-approval is the max 300, like 300,000, that's the most you want to spend on a house. This house hits the market and it's got a bunch of offers and they've got a deadline set, and I call the agent and find out that there's currently four offers on it, and three of them are over list price, and your max is 300, and the house is listed at 300. Like, sorry, that one's kind of out of your budget, and I hate to say it, but right. that's the reality of the situation.
Well, and that's the thing too, and that's why it's always good to have an agent or a loan officer that you can call and talk to and have run numbers, because as a loan officer, until we have an actual address, we're estimating taxes and insurance. And a good loan officer is going to overestimate those fees because they are going to play it safe and basically say, hey, yeah, you're approved up to this payment. Now, this payment typically correlates to this price, but there could be some wiggle room. We had a client like this.
Yes.
I had him up to 400,000. And he's like, well, is there any wiggle room? I said, well, yeah, there's always some wiggle room because of taxes and insurance. So if you see a house that's a little bit more, before you write an offer, make sure you send me that address and we can see if it works. And that's exactly what happened. They saw a house that was listed at 400. They were thinking that they were going to need to go up to 420 to win it. And I sent them numbers and they were able to see that and look at it and realize like, yeah, the taxes were low enough. Were much lower than what I had estimated for what that area, for what that county brings, that what we typically see in that area, that they were able to go up to 420 and make an offer. Now, they didn't like what they had to come in with, and they didn't like what, you know, where that put them at on a monthly payment wise, because it was stretching where they were going to be at. So they decided not to offer. But that, again, if you're proactive and your loan officer is actually sitting down and having a consultation with you and reviewing these numbers and telling you like, hey, so there's some wiggle room here. Like I'm doing this very conservatively and overestimating these numbers just to show you a worst case scenario, just so you're not caught by surprise, just in case there is a house that has higher taxes. There's certain areas within St. Louis that has higher taxes than others. And, you know, it's good because now you're like, oh, okay. Now I know like, hey, you send me a house. I'm going to give you four scenarios on that house up to the max that you can offer on. And you'll be able at that point to be like, all right, cool. I'm willing to go up to that max that I can offer on it or this, but you know, there's all these different things that kind of go into that process of buying. And it's always until you're under contract, you know, there's going to be a lot of communication back and forth and you need to be having those conversations and be communicating with your agent and your lender. So that way everybody's on the same page.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
But then once you're under contract, so when you get under contract, the next step, so for example, let's say you're working with Zach and I. Zach's going to take this. He's going to get the contract. He's going to get it submitted to his team that's behind the scenes, his contract to close team, and they're going to get everything turned into the title company, sent over to me. I'm going to get that paperwork, and I'm going to go put this into our system, and we're going to generate our disclosures that we have to send over to you. At that time, you and I are going to have a discussion on, do we want to get locked in or do we want to float the rate? What's going on in the market? What's set to come out that could affect interest rates? Things like that. And how long it is until you're closing. So there might be times where your closing's extended, you know, 45, 60 days. And there's a lot that can happen with rates. And, you know, typical lock period is about a 30-day lock, but we're needing to extend it to 60. Well, that adds a quarter point on top of your rate, which could change. You could be looking at a 6.99% interest rate. And if we have to bump it out to 60 days, that might bump you up to 7 1/8. Well, it's like, well, do you want to wait and see what happens? Or do you want, you know, there's a lot of things that can happen within that time. And that's one of those discussions that you have. And once we have that, we're going to send you these disclosures. You're going to sign the loan documents and disclosures. So, you know, understand everything that you're getting into. We can review it together, or you can just go in and sign it. It's about 50-50 on how that works with people. Some people will just go in and sign. Most people some people like, oh, can we go over this together so I know what I'm signing? Absolutely. And then once that happens, I'm going to get it. My team's going to get it, turn it over to our behind the scenes. So our junior processor is going to open the file, get certain things ordered, you know, flood certs, title requests, things like that sent out. And then it gets turned over into processing. Our processor is going to review the file. The processor is the go-between with the underwriter. So the processor is going to be like the second set of eyes after mine on the file to make sure that I didn't miss anything. You know, we try and get as many docs up front as we can, you know, but there's times where things come back like, oh, we need this, this, and this. And that's where she comes in and is reaching out and going all that. And then she gets it and submits it to underwriting. Underwriting reviews the file, comes back. Very rarely is it ever clear to close on the first try, but you know, we shoot for that. Obviously, most of the time it's not because we're on hold for the appraisal or some sort of something, or we're waiting for the appraisal. But we get it submitted to underwriting and we get that initial response back. Hey, you're approved, but here are the following conditions that we need. And then we follow up and ask you for, we might ask you for a few more docs. So just be prepared when you're buying, like, hey, just because you supplied docs up front doesn't mean that that's it. There could be more docs that come after the fact. And so we'll get those and then get it resubmitted and get it cleaned up and all that. To the point to where, like, if we are holding on the appraisal, that's all we need for clear to close. This process usually, usually about 10 days from the time we get it, turn it in, process in underwriting until we're, clear to close, or we're the appraisal away from being clear to close. If we get the appraisal ordered immediately, we can get you clear to close in like 10 days. So we work pretty quick and efficiently. And everybody's process on that side of the thing, depending on the lender you're working with, can be different. That's just my experience on it and how we handle it. And then once you're clear to close and we issue commitment, then it's just kind of waiting for closing.
Right.
About a week before, we'll send out preliminary numbers to meet government requirements. And then at the same time, we're sending it to title to start balancing. And then we're going to try and get you your numbers 3 days prior to closing, so you have time to either get a cashier's check or wire transfer, and then show up to the closing table, sign the docs, and once everything's all funded, it's yours.
Yeah, and on my side of things, once we go under contract, like Pat said, my team basically sends all the files to everywhere it needs to go, title company, lender. If our first steps as a buyer is we need to get those inspections scheduled. If you are getting inspections done, which I usually recommend you get those done. Usually it's going to be within a few days of us going under contract. Typically, I would say 3 to 5 days once we're under contract, we're having inspections done. The inspection company I work with, they knock everything out in one day. They get a team of 4 or 5 guys in there and they, spend about 4 hours in the house and go through everything and, go through the house with a fine tooth comb. And then that's when we get those inspections back. We review them, like, hey, is there anything that's wrong with the house or any major concerns? I typically try not to worry about, little nickel and dime, loose doorknobs, little stuff. We're mostly concerned with big items, the roof, the foundation, the HVAC system, the plumbing system, the electric system.
Sewer.
Yes. We're looking at all the items that are going to cost that multiple thousands of dollars. We're not looking at like
GFCIs.
Yeah, GFCIs and like little tiny stuff. The smoke detectors out of batteries. Like we're not worried about that. If there needs to be an occupancy inspection done at the property, which pretty often in St. Louis, it's standard that when the house transfers ownership, that there needs to be a new occupancy inspection done by the municipality. So, that most of the time the seller is going to be the one that handles that. So stuff like smoke detectors and stuff like that is typically going to get taken care of during occupancy. So, and you got to not worry about like little nickel and dime items like that. You can't be worried about that kind of stuff. You got to be worried about the big items. That's what we're going to negotiate with. We're not going to go to the seller with a bunch of, loose doorknobs and, a chipped paint or, a little this and that. You got to just be worried about the big items. So then if we formulate that list, if there is things we're going to ask for, that's when we then submit it to the seller.
How much time does a buyer typically have for their inspection period?
So the standard time in St. Louis is 10 days. So you have 10 days from the day after. So if we went under contract today, tomorrow's day one. So we have a 10-day period. Most often, if you're trying to make your offer more attractive in a multiple offer situation, or you have a smaller timeline, you're gonna reduce those days down. I'll usually do like a 7 or a 5 if it's really crazy, because my guys can usually get there within a couple days. And so we have, we have that time period to then submit our inspection request. That's on a form called the inspection notice. So we'll submit the inspection notice over to the sellers, and then in St. Louis or in Missouri, the standard amount of time that we have to negotiate and come to an agreement is 10 days. So when we submit that over, then we have 10 days to basically come to an agreement on what is going to happen with inspections. Okay, the seller's going to fix this. The seller's going to credit you for this. Or they're not going to do this, but they will do this. Whatever it is, you have to come to an agreement within 10 days. And once inspections are through negotiation, then it's kind of us waiting for the appraisal. Mm-hmm. And then really after that, you do a final walkthrough and make sure the house looked the way that it did when you originally walked through it, and the way that, you expect it to be. Make sure you do the final walkthrough and there wasn't you know, a bunch of rain the night before and there's a bunch of water in the basement or some crazy something like that. You know, I've seen it all at this point. you know, you'll do that final walkthrough, you know, a day or two before closing typically. And then on closing day, you'll sit down at that title company with me and Pat. And we, you know, Pat goes through the whole loan package with you. And sometimes he goes through the whole title package too. And, you know, you'll sign your name about 30 something times usually. Yeah. And then, you know, after that, wait for funding and you own a house.
Yeah.
So
what's that process look like on the seller side?
Yeah, on the selling side. Okay. Well, I mean, one of the other questions we got, which I guess this can kind of tie into this, but one of the other questions we got was, what are some tips for someone looking to sell their house this coming spring? So really, I think first step is, you know, reaching out to a good quality real estate agent. You need to find someone who's done listings before, someone that's not just going to take pictures with their phone and throw it up on the MLS and pray that this is what it's going to be. You know, first steps, you know, talk to a good real estate agent and they're going to hopefully tell you to kind of prep your house for the market. And, you know, what I mean by that is I want you to, you know, declutter, depersonalize the house, really get it as clean as you possibly can. You know, make minor repairs for like little shit that you can see. You know, this is one thing I've realized, you know, when you live in a house, you know, if something breaks or something's not right, you might live with it like that way for a while. And then you just kind of get used to that door. Oh, that door sticks or whatever it is. And you just kind of get used to that living in the house. That shit like that, just get that fixed. Like, make it the little stuff that you can repair yourself. Like, go ahead and do that. I never think that that's a bad idea. Another thing is before we hit the market, like, boost that curb appeal outside. Like, make sure the lawn's cut nice. Make sure your hedges are trimmed. Make sure the mulch, if you know, maybe put fresh mulch down in the gardens out front. You know, make sure the yard looks good. You know, are there leaves in the front yard? Is it fall time? Make sure that you clean up the leaves. You know, just make that house look as sexy as you can from the second that person pulls up. You know, and then second step I would say is really pricing your house right. That is, I mean, really the most important thing in my opinion is, because a house will sell, any house is going to sell for the right price, no matter what it is. You know, there's two reasons houses don't sell in my opinion, and that's price and condition. But price can fix it all. You know, right. And you can buy a house in a shitty condition if it's priced accordingly. You need to be open and you need to be realistic when you sit down with your agent and you look at the comps of all the things that have sold around you. I know it's sellers tend to think that they have, like, their house is the nicest house in the neighborhood. When we look at it realistically, there's a chance it is, but it's probably not. Yeah, you know, just because the house down the street from you sold for this doesn't mean your house is going to sell for this. You know, that house had this and your house doesn't, or whatever it is. So you got to price it appropriately and don't, you know, because I've had several people where they come out the gate way too hot and they overprice it and it sits. Okay. And then we reduce the price. And then it's, you know, because then at that point it's been on the market for a couple of weeks and you're like, okay, why isn't it selling? Well, it's still priced a little too high, you know, or whatever. Or now it looks kind of like it's old.
Right.
And so, you know, pricing it from the jump appropriately.
I mean, the market's going to tell you what your house should be worth.
Yes.
You know, people are going to offer or they're not. Or if they do offer and it's low, that's where the market puts your house.
Yeah. If your house is up for a week and you've got less than 10 showings, then you priced it wrong. Like, in my opinion. You know, like, you need to have the amount of showings you're getting is a direct reflection of how well you priced it, in my opinion. So pricing it right. Another thing would be staging. Staging your house is very important. I think it makes the photos and video turn out so much better. Like, and I'm not saying you have to hire a professional stager, because I've had several people that, you know, their house looks nice enough that we can, you know, that we can just use their furniture. I even have my stager will do like, she calls it an occupied stage. So, like, you know, she'll come in and she might, like, you know, take out one thing and put in a piece of her furniture that she think would look better. Or she adds like little accent stuff. She'll, you know, put nicer like towels and little things in the bathrooms and on the kitchen counters and all the things, you know? So I think staging is something to definitely consider, whether that's, you know, hiring a professional stager, or maybe, you know, you've got a, you know, an aunt or somebody that like has some interior design skills, you know, have them come over and check it out and see what they think. Like, that's an option too, if you don't want to pay for professional staging. And lastly, I would say marketing, you know, hiring an agent that is going to do very professional photos and video. I think that's extremely important. That's how everybody sees the house. They're going to see it online before they ever come in, before they ever come walk through it. So you got to make it look as sexy as possible from pictures and video. And I mean, and if your agent's not using professional photos, like, don't even consider them.
Right. I mean, I've seen pictures of houses and then toured houses, and I'm like, damn, that's a good photographer.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, 100%. You know, we laughed about it when Jason was in here, because he does all my photography, and you know, I'm like, how do you make this house, you know, yeah. you know, they always make the house look way better and nicer than it actually is. You know, but I mean, that's what gets them in the house,
right?
You know, and that's really what the photos are for, the photos and the video. And video is such a powerful tool. I mean, I get a lot of action on my listing videos, you know, I go a little kind of crazy with mine, but
it works.
And they get thousands of views, and how many eyeballs that gets, and how many shares they get, and they send it to people looking, right. Like it's so important. So I think finding an agent that's going to market it right with today's standards, which is professional photography and videography.
No, for sure.
Yeah. So those are my biggest tips when it comes to selling.
What about availability to get out of the house?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. If you have a showing, get the fuck out. That's like, that should be I shouldn't even have to say that, but.
And just know that you're going to have to get out at random times.
Yep.
Like, just be prepared for that.
Yeah. And I, you know, the way I typically do it is I recommend, you know, like, hey, if I like to hit the market on a Thursday or Friday. And I, you know, if it's a Friday, you know, I would say like, hey, go somewhere for the weekend. Go
somewhere.
Yeah. Go somewhere. I don't care. Yeah. You know, if you got a place at the lake or you got somewhere to go, you got a
buddy's house,
go get an Airbnb
I was staying at a friend's house.
Yeah. Go to a friend's house, go stay with your parents, go get an Airbnb just so that way you're not bothered and you don't have to come back into the house and like.
Well, that, and then you're not living in it too, because you're going to mess things up. You know, you're like having to clean and get it back to where you thought it was, and you're never going to get it back all the way there.
Yes.
So just leave.
Just leave. Yeah. And that, you know, and if you price it appropriately, usually if you're gone for 3 days in a row and you get a handful of, and you get quite a few showings in that weekend, there's a good chance you're going to get a few offers, especially in this market. So, you know, if you got to leave your house for 3 days and go and, you know, take a little trip or go stay with a buddy or your parents or do something. Like, it's going to be worth it. Yeah. Like, and it's going to be a big, way more convenient for your life too. Like, just not having to, you know, uproot the whole family and the dog and the this and go, you know, go drive around for an hour or something. Like, now I get it. If it doesn't go through that first weekend and you got to come back home, like, yeah, of course you need to live in your house, but like, if you can. And then, you know, if you have showings coming in, like, you need to make sure that house looks the way it should, you know, make sure it looks just the way it did when we got the photos taken, and you know, as much like it as you can.
Yep.
So yeah,
I think that covers it.
Right? Yeah.
All right, this is kind of a fun one. I mean, it's can you invent a time travel machine? I'm gonna switch it around and be like, if you could travel back in time, where would you travel? And two, is there, if you had a time travel machine, is there anything that you would change from your past?
Okay. First one, I would travel back to Egypt, I think. And it's like prime to really see what the fuck was going on there.
I was going to say the Roman Empire.
Dude, that's like, that is the big, those pyramids and how they were built is still, and I think that they're way older than we think they are. And I think that whatever civilization or whatever civilization was that built them was advanced beyond our imagination.
For sure.
Because their ability to move
like 1,000 pounds of
they're like 5,000 pound stones, and there's like 200,000 of them or something, or more than that, I think. And they were from a quarry 500 miles away. So how did they get that, all those rocks to Egypt and get them sculpted so that they all meet perfectly at a perfect point at the top. It all faces northeast, south, and west. Like, each side faces all the directions. And like, there's, and just the fact that like, you can't even slip, like you can't even put like a credit card in between the like it, everything's fits so perfectly. And it's like, these people, I think, were way more advanced than we give them credit for. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the theory, you know, that people like Randall Carlson are, you know, coming up with it, that there was a big reset with the Younger Dryas impact. You know, about 14,000 years ago, there was an asteroid like storm that hit the planet and kind of reset everything and destroyed a bunch of civilizations. And I think that there was probably technology that we've not rediscovered that's how they did it. And I mean, that's just kind of the theories that are out there, but it's just so fucking interesting to me. And I would love to know like how the fuck they did that.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool to see that. Mine, I think, like going back, I've always had a fascination with like the Roman Empire and things like that. And again, building of the Colosseum and experiencing events in the Colosseum and how life was like during those times. Like, I've always fascinated by that.
Oh yeah, dude. I mean, you got to think that those people were, just living life back then had to have been sane. I mean, and like going to an event in the Colosseum and seeing gladiators fight and like, you know, and the crazy thing is, you know, looking back at that time, you know, they were the most advanced civilization on the planet, but you know, and they never thought that it was going to come to an end.
Right.
You know, and like, I look at that, like us here in, you know, in America in 2025, like, you know, we think it's just going to last forever.
Right.
But like, what the fuck, you know,
we're going to be the next reset.
And, you know, I mean, I don't exactly know how many years the Roman Empire was like in existence, but you know, we've not been around, you know, America has not been here for very long.
No,
you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, we're here for, you know, what, since 1776. So 300 and something years, math. But yeah, it's, you know, and they probably thought they were going to be here forever and, you know, and they clearly aren't, and,
right.
You know, and here we are, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't think they had iPhones, you know, I mean, I think we technologically we're way more advanced, but like, I don't know. It's just, it's crazy to think that they thought that they were going to be here forever and then they're not. No.
Yeah. No. Second part of that.
What was the second part again? What would I change?
If you could go back in time, is there anything that you would change?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I can think of a few things, but like, I'm, you know, I don't know if I'd want to change them. Like, I can think of a few things that have gone wrong, you know, like, fuck, I still think about that. And I'm like, God damn it. You know, but like, I also think that like, the reason my life is the way it is today is because of those decisions and those hard things that I've had to go through.
Yeah,
and like,
same.
You know, like, sure, would I have loved to start, you know, I wanted to start jiu-jitsu at 15, you know, I'd been a black, you know, I'd be fucking way better at jiu-jitsu than I am. But like, if I would have gotten into it at 15, would I still love it like I do today?
Right.
You know, like, probably not.
And say you did and say you blow up and take off. Where is your life?
What's my life? Like, am I, you know, I don't think I'd change anything. Man.
People have asked me about that with baseball. Like, is there anything you would go back and change about your baseball career and things like that? And I'm like, no. It ended the way it was supposed to end. It happened the way it did. And because if I didn't, or like I do everything left-handed, but I throw a baseball right-handed, like go back in time. If I was a left-handed pitcher, like I was a right-handed pitcher, I'd probably still be playing baseball. And it's just like, oh, don't you ever wish you were left-handed? I'm like, well, yeah, that'd have been cool. But like, I wouldn't have my kids.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have, you know, who knows where I would be in life. Who knows if I would be happy with where I'm at in life at that point. I know that right now in my life, I'm happy with where I'm at. With all the shit that I've been through, everything that I've gone through, like, you know, especially now, like with the divorce, oh, is there anything you'd go back and change? No, not at all. Like, that was a learning experience. And, you know, going back, it's just like, you know, her and I being able to admit and realize like, hey, we weren't ever in love and we probably shouldn't have got married. But guess what? If we didn't get married, we wouldn't have Oliver. You know, those are all things that, you know, we think, go back and look at, but there's nothing that I would change because I wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd be doing something completely different. And I like where I'm at. I like where my life has gone and I've liked the relationships that I've had and built and the ones that I've lost along the way and everything like that. And I every single relationship is a stepping stone to something else. And, you know, I've had my heart broken plenty of times. But at the same time, it's a learning lesson and things like that. And, you know, just kind of made me into who I am today. Like, I feel like I'm pretty laid back and I feel like I've gotten to a point where I'm pretty, you know, pretty like in my thinking and the way I go about things is completely different than a lot of people and completely different than I was, shit, even a couple of years ago. So, no, I'm happy where I'm at. And I don't think I would go back and change anything.
Yeah.
So,
my other one was, least favorite thing you do as a father and what are you doing to fix it?
That's a good question.
obviously there's times where I've got the kids and I'm on my phone.
Yeah.
That's probably the worst. Like, you can always Connor and Oliver, like, when I, because like I said, with the divorce, like, I only have so much time with them. And there's times where, you know, I have them and I do have to work, you know, scheduling and things like that. Like, hey, this is something that I have to get scheduled, but it's not anything more than 45 minutes to an hour. But at the same time, they're just like, hey, like, they'll see me get them. No, dad, no, don't work. Don't
work. I get that too. Yeah.
Dad, no, don't do that.
Put the phone away. Yeah. Put the phone away.
Yep.
Like,
so,
oh, that breaks my fucking heart.
Yeah, it sucks. But there's that. And then, like, you know, like, there's times where I'm just fucking dead tired and they want to go do something. And, you know, it's about 50-50 whether I get up and do it or not. And I, like, go and do something with them or not. And, you know, it's like, all right, I need to adjust that. And even though I'm fucking tired, I just need to fucking nut up and do it.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, that's those are the biggest things for me.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, the phone thing as well, you know, which I think I'm making improvements, but I'm not perfect. The other thing I would say is, like, I mean, I, you know, and I've made improvements here as well, but, like, losing my temper sometimes, you know? Like, for example, the other day, like, I'm feeding Theo his baby food. You know, I got the jar of it sitting on the corner of his tray where he can't reach it. And all of a sudden, Calvin comes up and grabs the jar opened and just starts flinging it all over the house. And I'm like, no, you know, and like, you know, I definitely, like, got a little temper there for a second, you know, and, you know, and then I realized, okay, it's okay. It's just some smush carrots all over the fucking walls.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay. The dog's going to clean up half of it.
Yes. Coop's getting a healthy meal.
Yeah, he's getting a whole thing of carrots.
He's going to have a good poop later. Yeah.
his eyesight's going to be great from all the carrots, you know, but, you know, just like little times where you lose your temper. I think I've gotten better about that, you know, just kind of, you know, not giving. And, you know, Gina gets on me because I give Calvin reactions, and that's why he just likes to get under my skin, you know, because I've in the past, I've given him a lot of reactions when he does something he's not supposed to do.
Right.
And so I have been getting better about, you know, being more chill when he's, you know, kind of not doing something he's not supposed to be doing. And, you know, and kind of reacting that way. But, you know, there are times where I fucking forget about that and lose it a little bit. But. So I would say that's something I, you know, could definitely do better, and I am doing better at it. But, you know, there are times where I slip up. Yeah. So
no, and another one for me is, like, Melissa does a good job of this, but it's nice because she's got someone else that she can rely on. But she does one-on-one time. Mm-hmm. You know, when I have them, I'm by myself. So I can't just, like, no, Connor, stay here. I'm gonna go run outside and do something with Oliver
just
today.
Throw on the TV. Just chill.
Just
dude.
Chill, buddy.
Yeah.
See, hey, I'll be back in
an hour.
Yeah. I don't get that luxury, you know, like, but Melissa, you know, she gets to, she does those one-on-one dates with Connor and one-on-one dates with Oliver. So it's like when she does her one-on-one date with Connor, Oliver's getting to have a one-on-one day with Dalton.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And cool. It was something that, you know, having a partner and all that and growing in that I'm looking forward to, that we can split up and have one-on-one time with each child. And that's something that I'm sad that I don't get to do and wish I could do. So, yeah.
I think we both got the same question from the same guy.
Yep.
And I think I know what he's talking about.
Yeah, me too.
But, what gives you the right?
Yeah.
And, you know, cause we were joking about this, somewhat recently, is, you know, we had someone we were talking to here.
Actually,
and
had him on the podcast.
Yeah. We ended up having him on the podcast, but it was, he's like, well, you know, what gives you guys the right? Or why do you think that you think you're an authority on manhood, fatherhood, and entrepreneurship?
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, we're not authorities.
We're not,
you know,
no,
like
we're not authority.
We just get on here and that's what we talk about.
Right.
I wouldn't just because I sit here and talk about something doesn't mean I'm an authority on it.
Right.
Like I just talk about my experiences and hopefully people can relate to them
right.
and like, you know, maybe learn from some of the fucking mistakes I make, or maybe that you listen to this and it, you learn something or you're entertained at the very least.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of the whole reason we do this.
Right. And I would never sit here and say I'm an authority on manhood or fatherhood.
Maybe real estate.
Like just,
that's
right.
Maybe the only thing I think you and I can say we're an authority on.
Yeah. And I mean,
we do it professionally. And
right. And
get
I just
paid to do it.
I just think we're both very relatable people and people, you know, the issues and things that we go through are common issues. We're just
more open to talk about it. And, you know, I just think that, you know, and that's why we bring guests on, because our guests are, you know, it's another perspective, and it allows us to have those type of conversations and get those people to kind of, you know, I've learned a lot from some of the people that we've had on here and the way they do things. And it's been great. You know, there's more than one way to do something. There's more than, you know, there's more than one way in definition of being a man, and that's changes for everyone. There's more than one way to be an entrepreneur, for sure. You know, they are going to run into things that we might not have run into, or we've run into things that they haven't yet, and they can learn from that. You know, the mentality, everybody's got a different mentality for the most part, like in how they approach things, but there's always that one thing that comes back that, you know, that those people have. They're driven, and they work hard, and they're obsessed with what it is that they're doing, and they're willing to go all in on it, and they're willing to put the work in and understand, like, hey, it's going to be a struggle. It can be a struggle. But as long as we continue to bust your ass, things are going to be successful. Those are all things that we've done. We wouldn't be where we're at and had the success that we have if we hadn't gone through those things. You know, it's funny, like, I got an email from somebody from a national publication for mortgages, and they reached out with spring training coming around. And I guess there's a large group of mortgage lenders that are former professional baseball or former baseball players. No, you're not professional, but, and, you know, he was just like, well, what is it about baseball players that make them successful at being mortgage lenders?
I know where you're going.
Yeah. I need to call him and have a conversation with him about it and dive into that with him. And I'm excited for that I'm considered in that.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, it's just experiences that we've had that we're open to talk about, and it may resonate with some, and sometimes we may come across and sound like fucking idiots.
Yeah. That's
But we're okay to sound like we're okay with sounding like idiots on certain things. And I'm not afraid to do something stupid. I've done so much stupid shit in my life, or said so like stupid shit that, hey, I might say it on here, but, you know, at least I'm out here, you know, at least I'm going to be out here, and I'm going to be open, and I'm going to be honest, and people are going to get to see who I am, and hopefully they, you know, resonate with it, or they can, you know, pick something up from it. If not, no worries. You're not going to hurt my feelings. If you're not, you think I'm an idiot, cool. I know I am. I know that I'm an idiot, you know, but yeah, it's just the willingness to be open and share is where we're at with it. So
yeah, dude, 100%, man. I totally agree with everything you just said. Yeah. So
cool.
Well, I think that's a good spot to call it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Thanks for all the questions.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for all the questions. We really enjoy these Q&As. They're like our favorite ways to do these duets,
for sure.
In my opinion. Yeah. It's my favorite thing we do.
It's a great way to cover multiple topics.
Yeah. Just very diverse. Right. You know, we talked about real estate, talked about fatherhood, talked about
dating,
talked about ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
All stuff we're experts on and authorities on. So
yeah, exactly.
So please let me know all the questions you have about ancient Egypt.
Right.
But please subscribe. Please click that subscribe button if you haven't already. That would help us out a ton. We are trying to grow the show, and you know, we are making some progress there, but you know, always can do more. So please click that subscribe button, hit that like button, comment what you thought below, and we will see you next time.